be done. Wings will be done. Wings will be done. Wings will be done.
Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Axis Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. Today's program is climate activists talking about the Keystone Pipeline and divestment from fossil fuels with Tom Ashbrook.
Dorian, I'm reading here of Wynn Stevenson writing at Grist about your generation of protesters, and he says they see the catastrophic trajectory their elders have put the planet on and the failure of governments, corporations, and media to address the crisis in any adequate way, feel something approaching desperation. You feel forced onto a path of radicalism. Is that about right?
It's definitely something that is becoming increasingly prevalent amongst all of myself and a lot of people that I work with. You know, all of these new reports that are coming out from the World Bank, from the International Energy Agency, do not paint a pretty picture of our future. And what that yields is fear. It's a deep fear of knowing that the world that you grew up in is not the world that you are going to see moving forward, and that is not the world that you can afford to bring your children up in. That instability will be prevalent, that conflict will be prevalent. And growing up, as lucky and as privileged that I haven't yet had to face food instability. I have not felt the hunger of not being able to eat for days or weeks or not knowing when my next meal is going to come from. But with the crop failures...
Do you expect that for you in your lifetime because of climate change?
We saw major crop failures in the Midwest and throughout the country. We've seen food prices skyrocket numerous times in the past decade. We live in a place of extreme wealth in the United States, but I do not believe that makes us safe from these radical changes.
So here we are. People are talking a lot about divestment. Emily, look at that for a minute. Are you working on that in California, getting colleges there to take their money out of fossil fuel companies? Does it look promising?
Yes, that's what we're mostly working on out here. And it does look very promising. We've made a lot of progress so far. Speaking directly for the UCs, so the California Student Sustainability Coalition started up a campaign, I'd say about a year and a half ago, called the End Coal Campaign. And that was sort of a precursor to this divestment movement. And then it was also started up on the East Coast with Swarthmore College. Since then, we at the UCs have been working a lot on trying to figure out how to get our colleges to divest their funds away from the fossil fuel industry. And so what we're doing is we're not targeting each individual campus. We're looking at the UC system as a whole, the UC regions. And so the UCs are now working together, which is really great because that hasn't happened so many times before. But what we're seeing already, we've had three campuses pass resolutions through their student senates that basically say that we, the students, urge the regions to divest their money. And that was at Berkeley, Santa Barbara, and San Diego. We're working with our faculty and our staff. We have some faculty working groups on some of the campuses. And then we're planning to have a really big presence at the Regents' meeting coming up in May.
You're getting the attention of some pretty high-placed folks. There's a U.S. Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, a Democrat of Rhode Island. This is on the floor of the Senate in December, talking about the student-led fossil fuel divestment movement.
As Congress sleepwalks, Americans actually are taking action on their own. In coordination with the nonprofit organization 350.org, for example, students at more than 150 colleges and universities across the country are pressing those institutions to sell off the portions of their endowment portfolios that are invested in fossil fuel companies. These students are imploring their schools to weigh the real cost of climate change against the drive for greater financial returns and divest from the polluters.
Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, Maura Kelly, that takes us back to kind of apartheid-era movements to divest from South Africa. But these have been pretty successful stocks for a lot of universities' endowments over the years. And some big schools have already said, no, we're not divesting. Is there really the leverage out there to make this happen?
I think there's absolutely the leverage. We already have a lot of victories on the divestment front. We have student colleges, University of Maine, Hampshire, and Sterling have already divested from fossil fuels. Beyond that, this generation is not giving up. We are the generation that has brought you Arab Spring and the revolutions in the Middle East. We are the generation that has brought you the first African-American president in the United States, and we're going to be the generation that brings you clean energy. That is who we are. This is what we have named as one of our top issues for our work as a generation moving forward. And so there's absolutely the leverage. We're the largest generation in U.S. history. There's a lot of people out there, and we all want to see clean energy, and we all want to see this divestment away from fossil fuels.
And what about Ralph Nader's complaint there that he doesn't see the fire in the belly sufficient to the challenge.
Maybe Ralph Nader is getting a little too old and needs to hang out with college kids. I mean, it's out there.
Maybe Therese in Des Moines, Iowa. Therese, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Thank you. Hi, Tom. Yeah, discriminating against older people, that's a really good mission for you. You know, we Americans are so tired of hearing about all of this. Oh, clean this, and we're in a crisis, and this is an emergency. You know, I get, you know, taking care of hardworking coal miners and their families and making sure that there's clean water there. Yes, absolutely. But it's time for us to drill here at home. We cannot afford $4 a gallon gas. I can't afford that. I don't know how you guys afford what you're paying there in California, but we are so for this Keystone Pipeline. It is time to drill here at home. Put our Americans to work. Use our energy wisely. These cars that they're coming out with, these clean energy cars, are ridiculous. The batteries don't even last 30,000 miles. These car companies are figuring out that they can't afford to guarantee these batteries for a life of the car. So then you've got these people with these Hondas, clean energy cars that are no good, and they're going to a landfill. And $5,000 to replace a car battery.
Therese, what do you say to the young people we've got here, though, who say, you know, of course people are worried about their jobs, but if there isn't some change, climate change is going to make everybody miserable, job or no job. What do you say to that, Therese?
They're making we, the American people, miserable by all this rigmarole. These hardworking police officers that have to take their time to remove these people off of these work sites. Give me a break. Yes.
Therese, we got it. My time is short before the break, but I appreciate your call. I will take it to them. Dorian, Therese is in Des Moines. She's listening, and you hear that pretty utter lack of sympathy, except with your maybe mountaintop support of coal miners and clean water for them. She just doesn't want to hear it. Rigmarole, she says.
You can listen to great speeches and interviews on accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
We're not gonna go to war, no. We're not gonna go to war. Coming today from California, yeah. Those on the hill who lack the vision, subjecting themselves to activism. Hacktivism, coming page by page, sending all the net through the underground airwaves. Rise up and speak your mind, tired of the grind and kissing others behind. Find the maker to the enemy line, sign the name on a petition. Listen, wishing to hear fact, not fiction. It's a mission, you need to yell with conviction. We're not gonna go to war, nah. We're not gonna go to war, because lying, cheating, stealing, robbing and killing ain't what I'm here for. We're not gonna go to war, no. We're not gonna go to war. Women and kids in the name of oil. Boil over on the floor. You got what you need, but you want much more. Whore, working the streets, counting the tricks. You're turning pride beneath the dirty sheets. See where we see what we want us to see, and how you want us to be, how you want us to be. Taking the freedom from the land of the free, unnecessary for our own safety. Be all that I can be, marching up and down on the city streets, yelling out, we're not gonna go to war. We're not gonna go to war, because lying, cheating, stealing, robbing and killing ain't what I'm here for. We're not gonna go to war. We're not gonna go to war. We're not gonna go to war.
We're not gonna go to war, no. We're not gonna go to war. We're not gonna go to war, no. We're not gonna go to war.
We cannot afford more storms like Sandy. We cannot afford more wildfires. We cannot afford more drought. And we cannot afford the expectation that we can continue this lifestyle that has created the problems we see today. And I understand why that is hard to hear. And I understand that if you don't feel like you will live through what will happen because of climate change, why it's not a reality that you want to face. And it's much more convenient and it's much easier to worry about things like the price of gas. But that is not something, that is not a short-term timeline that I can afford to think about. And that is not a short-term timeline that our country can afford to act based on.
You're 21. Do you expect to see major climate change implications in your lifetime?
We already have seen major climate-related change already, way faster than a lot of the science expected. So what that means in terms of what I will see through my entire lifetime is a huge uncertainty. And it is hard to not immediately go into places of desperation and fears of collapse, because we've seen what happens when resource scarcity plagues a country, plagues a part of the world, and I fear what that will do to this country and the American people.
Dorian Williams, Maura Cowley, Emily Williams in California, please stand by. We're talking about a harder, edgier, more urgent environmental movement with a new generation of climate activists. A little Keystone protest right there in Washington last month. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with environmental activists, no, climate activists, they call themselves, something beyond the old-fashioned environmentalism that they would hope will be up to the climate challenges of this century. Lots of callers here. Greg in Buffalo, New York. Greg, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
An avid listener. I'm a baby boomer. I'm 62 years old.
Okay.
And I would ask your guests to please not write off my cohort or my generation, despite the phone call that you took a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
I would ask them to place use a strategy and a series of tactics of how to begin to engage those of us who still have fire in their belly for climate activism. Maybe we can are in financial positions to offer more financial donations.
Yeah.
Just find ways, a series of tactics of how to engage. I have a series of friends that I know would very much like to be involved.
Greg, everybody here has got their hands up. I think by no means do they not want your company in their effort. Dorian, I see you squirming there.
No, I am very reassured, and thank you for that sentiment. And I work all the time with some amazing people from many age groups, many generations. And while climate change puts an extreme burden on ours in particular, everyone who is alive now is seeing the effects, and I see us all being able to come together, working with groups like 350 Massachusetts. That's a local network that has been a hub of a number, drawing from a number of places for people of all ages to get involved. And, you know, it's,
I mean, we brought in the young because you guys have a new sound to the way you're framing this, and maybe indeed faced more imminent changes than another generation. But I don't see any barrier here to participation. Got a lot of people commenting online. Marcus says, on most issues, I see groups like this to be naive kids with too much time on their hands. Well, we are, Marcus writes, we are out of time on climate change, and I don't see any real progress through other approaches. So good for them, Marcus says. North of the Border writes, don't know about you, but I find climate change a very hard topic to discuss among friends and family. It's on everyone's mind, but people can't even bring themselves to talk about it. Maybe climate activists see the writing on the wall and aren't afraid to speak out, sensing that their generation will get stuck holding the bag. Let me go to Phil in Wakefield, Springfield, Rhode Island. Phil, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
Pretty well. What do you see?
Well, here in Rhode Island, as you probably know, we've gone through several major storms in just a few months. And I totally attribute it to climate change. And I'm actually on my way home to divest my oil and gas holdings. It's the least I can do. I appreciate the work that these young people are doing.
Hey, Phil, let me ask you, those a lot of energy stocks have done pretty well in recent years. You're going to be sad to say goodbye to that, or does it feel like...
No, I'll take my dirty profits and put them into something that hopefully isn't quite as onerous and poisonous.
Hey, there's a man ready to act, Morikawa, ready to change his portfolio for you.
That's great. And I would just say that right now, the wind industry is growing. The solar industry is growing. These are great places to invest. I mean, these are growing industries, which is you don't see every day right now.
But I mean, what's growing faster than those? Fracking. And there's all kinds of interest in these tar sands. You may not want that pipeline, but boy, people are all over that. People are talking about new ways of drilling for oil. I mean, that is growing, too. Emily Williams, you must see that. And I wonder if it makes you feel like, you know, the energy companies are just out in front of you, and maybe demand and need is out in front of you.
We really see that out here. It's a fact that a lot of our country's infrastructure is based on the fossil fuel industry, and natural gas and fracking is posing sort of a huge conundrum to us because it is a very new technology in a way, and it's very, a lot of people see it as being something very promising. But what we need to remember is it promising in the long run? And the answer is no. We've already talked about climate change and how this is posing a threat to our future generations, and so we need to nip it in the bud. There are a lot of great industries that are growing, like Mara had mentioned, like the solar industry and the wind energy industry. What we're trying to do with divestment is we're trying to pull away our funds, not to financially cripple the companies, but to basically cripple their reputation. These companies have such a stranglehold not only on the political structure but also on industry in general. They are getting all kinds of subsidies from the government, and it's partly for that reason that renewable energies are not getting the subsidies they need to grow so that they can be completely competitive with the fossil fuel industry.
But let me ask you about this one fairly well-placed individual in this country who, a month and some ago now, was giving a State of the Union address talking about this. Mr. All of the Above on Energy. Here's President Obama.
The natural gas boom has led to cleaner power and greater energy independence. We need to encourage that. And that's why my administration will keep cutting red tape and speeding up new oil and gas permits. That's got to be part of an All of the Above plan.
Dorian Williams, there's your president after re-election. That's not part of a re-election campaign there. He's looking at the economy, I guess. He's looking at, he's listening to, well, more than just your groups, obviously, and saying, here we go, all of the above, speed up the permits, let's drill, almost drill baby drill.
It's incredibly disappointing and disheartening, and, you know, oil and gas are fossil fuels. They contribute to climate change, and natural gas is absolutely a false transition fuel. What is it?
Cleaner than oil, cleaner than coal.
Depending on how you look at the methane leaks and how it poisons people's water, fracking is enormously dangerous both to our climate and to those communities. And if the president is willing to betray my generation and begin speeding up and permitting these projects, we will go to these communities. And what I believe is the front line of this fight is the fossil fuel infrastructure. The communities who are affected by that infrastructure are the front line communities affected, and that is why I went down to West Virginia. That is why I've taken action against TransCanada to take the fight to them.
What are you suggesting exactly? Maura said that this movement will fight the Keystone Pipeline if necessary, mile by mile. Are you talking about an earth-first sort of approach here? We've seen in the past, you know, things, I don't know, torn apart, set fire, blown up. Is that it, or is this all strict civil disobedience? What do you have in mind?
We will always remain peaceful. We will always take the moral high ground. What they're doing is dangerous and violent, what they're doing to these communities. The fossil fuel companies. Mm-hmm. They are killing people by poisoning their water and by creating these extreme weather events that have taken so many lives already. And we will fight these infrastructures where they are. We will go mile by mile for all 1,700 of those miles. There are already groups fighting that pipeline. The tar sands blockade has done numerous actions and able to actually make the pipeline rerouted through certain parts of Texas because of their tree sits. And we will go to Texas. We will go to Oklahoma. We will go to West Virginia. We will go wherever we need to be.
Why do you think this president is saying all of the above, speed up the permits? He's been reelected, so it's not about election at this point. What's your analysis, though? Here's a powerful man, not a fool, presumably. And, you know, it's not as though he's done nothing, but many people are disappointed with his first term when it comes to the environment. Why do you think he's taking this position? Is he maybe onto something that we need this for jobs, or is it something? something else. How do you interpret it, Doreen?
I don't know. Honestly, I don't know.
Mauro, what do you say?
I mean, right now, oil companies are spending billions of dollars in D.C. and across the country on a misinformation campaign that says oil's clean and oil and gas is safe. And that's not true. It's just like Big Tobacco did when they told us that smoking was safe.
You think the president buys that because he saw it in a TV ad?
We're seeing the industry is infecting the studies around fracking. We're seeing departments across the country that are doing fracking studies that have industry ties.
But I mean, as a serious question, do you think President Obama's sense of reality is shaped by those television ads from the energy industry?
When we were protesting the Keystone XL pipeline, 50,000 people in D.C., President Obama was out golfing with the oil industry. So, yeah, I think he is hearing some pretty faulty stuff from these guys.
Nina in Boston. Thanks for calling, Nina. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
While I agree with your guests on, you know, their desire and to protect the environment for social justice and the stranglehold that corporations have over the government, on the other hand, my question is, given that we have this dependency on oil and energy, how do we avoid foreign entanglement due to this dependency? I mean, we don't want to get into more wars in the Mideast. And it seems on a practical level that getting our oil from Canada does have certain benefits.
Yeah.
Obviously we want to move towards cleaner sources of energy, but that's not going to happen overnight. And I just think that this is not one of these black and white issues. And I'm just wondering what are the practical steps they would say, you know, could be taken.
Nina, let us pick it up. Mauro, you hear that. There's somebody who says, okay, the fact is we are dependent at this point. And we don't want more wars in the Middle East if we can avoid it, energy-related wars. So you know, what do you do? There's an honest question from Nina.
Well, yeah, and I would say this is the number one lie that the fossil fuels companies have been putting out about the Keystone XL pipeline. This oil is not oil that is meant to be used in the U.S. They are building this pipeline down to the Gulf of Mexico. That is where we will export it to other countries. It is a foreign company, TransCanada, that is building a pipeline for export through the United States. That's the fact of the matter. But we, you know, people think we're going to use this oil domestically. We are not going to use this oil domestically. It's going outside of our country.
Well, you know, I've tried to keep busy in the White House with the horseshoe pit and Barbara and the grandkids and everything, but golly, somehow, something just seems to be missing. Oh, golly.
George, do what presidents have always done. Call out the army. You need a brand new war to lift your spirits up.
That won't alarm me. But do you think we should send troops to Panama now?
George, you need a little isthmus right this very minute. Give Manuel the business. If you now begin it, we could all be home by Christmas. We might even win it.
Kick Manuel right in the fanny. Send a force that's led by Danny.
Tell Noriega I'm gonna raid him like I panty raided at Phi Delta Omega.
Wear your combat ribbons from the National Guard.
Yes, we need a little isthmus. So many months we waited. The army told us this must be better than Grenada. No more peaceful coexist must. Danny will invade it.
I'll be just like Patton.
Brush up on your Latin.
Send him to the isthmus.
Just what nation is this?
Need a little isthmus now.
More from great speeches and interviews after these messages.